ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We are reading from chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita, text number 15. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto Mattah smritir jnanam apohanam cha Vedaischa sarvair aham eva vedyo वेदांत कृत वेद विद एव चाहम सर्वस्य चाहम हृदि सन्निविष्टो मत्तः स्मृतिर् ज्ञानम् अपोहनम् च वेदैश्च सर्वैर् अहम् एव वेद्यो वेदांत कृत वेद विद एव चाहम सर्वस्य चाहम हृदि सन्निविष्टो मत्तः स्मृतिर् ज्ञानम् अपोहनम् च वेदैश्च सर्वैरहमेव वेद्यो वेदांत कृत वेद विद एव चाहम Sarvasya, of all living beings, cha, and aham, I, hridi, in the heart, sannivishtaha, being situated, mattaha, from me, smritihi, remembrance, jnanam, knowledge, apohanam cha, and forgetfulness, vedaihi, by the Vedas, cha, also, sarvaihi, all, aham, I am, eva, certainly, vedyaha, knowable, Vedanta Krit, compiler of the Vedanta, Vedavet, the knower of the Vedas, Eva, certainly, Cha, and Aham, I. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas am I to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Please repeat after me. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas am I to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana-shalakaya Chakshurun-militam-yena Tasmai-shri-gurave-namaha Namom-vishnu-padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Namaste Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So last Wednesday we were discussing the role of the Paramatma, of the Super Soul in the heart. For those of you who were not present last time or who have come here for the first time, I will just briefly recapitulate. Last time we studied the verse Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishthati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutanam Yantrarudhani Mayaya. In this verse, Lord Krishna is explaining that he expands himself and occupies the heart of every living entity. He is present in the heart of every living being, and that form of the Lord who is present in everyone's heart is called the Paramatma or the Super Soul. We should always remember that the Paramatma and the Jeevatma are distinct. The Jeevatma is the individual self and the Paramatma is the Supreme Self, the Supreme Soul, Shri Krishna. So this Paramatma is situated in the heart, and Yantrarudhani Mayaya, this material energy, or this body is comprised of the material energy, and he is directing the wanderings. The Super Soul is seated in this machine made of the material energy, and he is directing all the wanderings of this material body. Brahmayan Sarva Bhutanam. So in this way we saw how the Super Soul is seated in the heart and is controlling our lives, our every single moment, our every single event, our every single thought, word and deed is governed by the Paramatma in the heart. It is the same Lord Shri Krishna, but he has expanded himself into this form, into this four-handed form, to occupy the heart of every living entity. So we can see that only a person who is in ignorance thinks that he is independent. At all points of time, we are always under the control of Lord Shri Krishna in his form of the Paramatma. But we also saw that unless one has a pure heart, a pure, clear mind, one cannot understand the presence of the Super Soul. Just like there are so many voices in our own mind telling us so many different things, asking us for so many different things. What are these voices? These voices are the voices of our material desires. We have an infinite number of material desires in our heart that are always seeking for attention, that are always seeking our attention. And in this babble of voices of material desires, the Paramatma's voice is also there, instructing us, come back to me, lead a godly life, come on the right path. But because we have so many other voices along with that in the heart, we are not able to distinguish which is the voice of the Paramatma. And we give the example of a radio. When you switch on the shortwave in your radio, there are so many noises from so many different railway radio stations coming that you can't, unless you fine-tune it and you have a fine filter in your radio, you cannot actually fine-tune your radio to this particular station you want. So similarly, unless we have a pure heart, free from all material desires, we cannot understand how the Paramatma is situated in the heart and how he is actually controlling our lives from moment to moment. Having a pure heart means having a controlled mind. Having a pure heart doesn't mean that you don't have any cardiac problem or that you don't have any ischemic heart disease. Having a pure heart means that you don't have any material desires in your heart, that you only want to serve the Lord. Therefore, Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Jitatmanah prashantasya paramatma samahitah shitoshna sukha dukheshu तथा मानापमानयो. He says, for one who has controlled his mind, the Paramatma is already reached. The Paramatma in the heart is already reached. Such a person already knows the Paramatma. And therefore, in that situation, Shitoshna Sukha Dukheshu. Therefore, Shit means cold, Ushna means heat. So he is able to become equipoised in both heat and cold. Sukhe Dukheshu. That means even in pleasure and pain, he is the same. And man apaman means honor and dishonor. When somebody honors us, we are very happy. And when somebody dishonors us or insults us, we are very unhappy, we become very pained. But a person who has controlled his mind, he knows the Paramatma. And because of that, he is able to come beyond or transcend all these dualities. And therefore he is very peaceful, prashantasya. Otherwise, a person who has not controlled his mind and who doesn't know the Paramatma is always disturbed. Always agitated. Any slightest provocation immediately gets very agitated. So therefore we can see that it is practically very important for everyone in this world to try to understand who is the Lord situated in the heart. And Krishna in this verse is giving us further information. Last time we saw how he is directing our wanderings. And now in this shloka, he is telling us further information about how he is acting from within our heart. Now, we will cover this shloka in two sessions. Because the first two lines of the shloka deal with how the Paramatma is acting. And the next two lines deal with the Vedas. So it's a slightly different subject. So we will deal in this class today only with the first two lines. And next time with the next two lines. So here Lord Krishna is telling us, Mattah smritir jnanam apohanam cha. He tells us that from him comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. Now every day we are remembering something, we forget something and we know something. So we should realize that every point of time it is only the Paramatma or the Super Soul who is giving us all this knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. In the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna that in the beginning he explained this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vivashvan. So Arjuna is confused because Lord Krishna was as old as he was only 125 years old at the time of the battle of Kurukshetra. So Arjuna is confused. Now we are only 125 years old, you are as old as me, and the sun god, he is many millions of years old. He is not our contemporary. So how is it that you have taught this knowledge to the sun god so long back? I don't understand this, Krishna, you please explain to me. So Krishna says, Bahuni me vyatitani janmani tavacha Arjuna tanyaham veda sarvani natvam vethas parantapa. He says, my dear Arjuna, both of us have passed through many, many lives. I remember all of them, but you do not. So why is it that Krishna remembers all his lives in the past and we do not? Because Krishna is God. God means he is beyond forgetfulness. If God can also forget, then what kind of a God is he? So Krishna is perfect and complete, so he never forgets. But the Jivatma or the individual soul is a tiny part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, he is prone to be forgetful. Several sessions back, we discussed the reason why we forget our previous lives. Does anyone remember why we don't remember what we were in the previous life? Does anyone remember that reason? What is the chief reason why we do not remember what we did in the previous lives? Senses are limited, yes, but fundamentally there was one very important reason. Just this is just a revision, this one point. Yes? Yes. Yes, that is an external reason, you are correct. But that is not the ultimate reason. That is the external reason. Even through that pain, if Krishna wanted to make us remember, he could have made us remember. But still, Krishna makes us forget. Because he's saying here, Mattah smriti jnanam apohanam. Apohanam means forgetfulness. Krishna says, I make you forget your previous lives. Why? Yes, that's the correct answer. Unless we forget what we were in the last lives, how can you enjoy? At the time of your last life, we all have died. Death is such a painful experience. We have had so many painful experiences in our last life. Birth is such a painful experience. Death is such a painful experience. Old age, disease. So many other terrible situations we have faced in the last life. Not only last life, we have lived for millions and trillions of lives in this material world. And in each of these lives, we have had such horrible, terrible, painful situations. Can you imagine if all these painful situations were to be remembered by you all at one time? Could you enjoy? Could you go out and say, okay, I will go to a movie and I will enjoy? Is it possible? Suppose someone in your family dies, a very near and dear one, and you are immersed in sorrow. And 5 minutes later, somebody comes and tells you, come on, let us go for a picnic. Will you be in a mood to go? You will say, no. You will be too much in sorrow. So similarly, all these painful situations of the past, if they were to come upon you all at one time, you would not be able to enjoy in this world. Or at least, you would not be able to try to enjoy. And ultimately, our purpose in coming to this material world is that we wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna. We wanted to tell Krishna that I don't want to be with you, I want to be independent. So Krishna says, okay. Just like a father, he tells a stubborn child when he creates mischief, okay, you go and play in the corner, go on. So that we go into the material world and we try to enjoy. Then after some time when we realize that we are only suffering, then we come back to Krishna. So this is the reason Krishna makes us forget. It is His mercy to help us to try to enjoy in this world more and more. So ultimately we will come to our senses and then realize, this is not the place for me. I should not be here in this material world. So what is the meaning of death? Death means forgetfulness. Complete forgetfulness. When you die, you forget what you were in this life, what you were in the lives previous to that. And then after a few months, what happens? Naturally, you have to be born again. Krishna explains, jatasya hi dhruvo mrityu dhruvam janma mritasya cha. For one who is dead, birth is certain, and for one who is born, death is certain. So sooner or later you will be born again in some other mother's womb. And at that time what happens? Then Krishna is there. He has made you forget now, apohanam. But then Krishna says, no, I am not partial. I don't give you only forgetfulness, I also give you remembrance. So at some point in your mother's womb, He will wake you up. Come on, wake up. And the child comes to consciousness within the mother's womb. He wakes up, and then slowly the consciousness comes, reawakens, and the Paramatma seated in the heart reminds the child, look, according to your past karma, in your previous life, you wanted to enjoy in this fashion, so you have got a cat's body, or you have got a dog's body, or you have got a human body. So come on, now enjoy. You wanted to enjoy, so here is a chance to fulfill your desires. Go on, enjoy. So in this way, Lord Krishna from within as the Paramatma is giving us the required remembrance. The body that we have now is obtained according to our past deeds, our past karma. And once we get this body, then Krishna gives us that remembrance. That look, you are here for this purpose. In this material world you have come, you have left me and come to try to enjoy. And you have tried to enjoy in this kind of way, so I have given you this kind of a body. So come on, wake up and now enjoy. And not only does He give remembrance, but Krishna says, Jnanam, I also give you knowledge of how to enjoy. Without Krishna giving us knowledge of how to enjoy, no one can enjoy. All the people who are enjoying this world, who are atheistic, they cannot go about their worldly enjoyment unless Krishna gave them the knowledge of how to enjoy. For example, you may see sometimes a small baby lizard is born or a small insect is born. It comes out of the egg. And immediately if there is an insect close by, what will he do? The lizard? What will he do? He will open his mouth, take out his tongue, snatch that insect, put the insect in his mouth and close his mouth. Isn't it? Where did he get that knowledge from? He never went to school. Nobody taught him that you have to open your mouth when you come close to the insect. How did he learn all this? The Paramatma from within guided him. He told him, yes, now this is your food, this insect, you open your mouth, I will teach you how to live in this world. So automatically, he opened his mouth and he's surviving. So not only does Lord Krishna give you forgetfulness at the time of death, but He also reminds you of your purpose in life, and then again He gives you knowledge of how to go about trying to enjoy this material world. So in this way, the Jivatma, the individual living entity, is moving in the wheel of sansara. So the wheel of sansara is what? The cycle of birth and death. Accepting one body after another. It's going on and on and on. It has been going on for so many millions and millions of lives. So now you may say, Now, to understand the actions of the Paramatma, do I have to wait till I get the next birth? No. We are all experiencing it every morning when we wake up from sleep. Because after all, what is death? Death is also an extended sleep. When you go to bed at night, you sleep for about 6 hours or 8 hours. But when you die, you sleep for many months. And then you're woken up in your mother's womb, in your new mother's womb. You have another mother, and you're woken up. So in both cases, whether you're sleeping in your bed or whether you're sleeping in your mother's womb, it's not very different. Only difference is that in one case it is for 8 hours, another case it is for 8 months or 10 months or 1 year. And in both cases, it is a Paramatma from within who wakes you up. Every day when you go to sleep, the Paramatma switches you off. There is an off switch. He switches off, and therefore you're able to fall asleep. Some people suffer from insomnia. They cannot sleep. If without the Paramatma's sanction, you cannot sleep. Unless the Paramatma within sanctions, okay, he switches off the knob. Sometimes when you're sleeping, if somebody doesn't switch off the light in the room, you can't fall asleep. So similarly, unless the Paramatma switches off the switch inside your heart, you cannot fall asleep. And once it is switched off, you will not wake up unless the Paramatma switches it on. So sometimes people have an automatic alarm. They get up automatically at a certain time by force of habit. What is this by force of habit? That is nothing but the Paramatma from within telling you, come on, now it is time to wake up. Come on. And sometimes when the person doesn't wake up, if he's a patient in a hospital bed, and if he doesn't wake up, then what are you to understand? If he doesn't wake up, morning is past, afternoon is past, it is evening. Yes? Then you should understand that now he will wake up only after several months, and also in a different body. In other words, he is dead. So when the Paramatma decides that now, yes, the time is over for the Jivatma to leave this body, so he will instruct the Jivatma, now yes, you should leave. And so the Jivatma goes, and goes according to his karma, he goes and occupies another body. So in this way, the Paramatma is also the alarm clock. And when you wake up in the morning, because you were forgetful in the night when you were sleeping. When you were sleeping, did you remember who you were? Do you remember anything of what you are when you sleep? You're completely in a different world. So when you wake up, again Krishna has to remind you. Okay, you are Mr. So-and-so, you are manager in so-and-so company, and now you have to reach office at 9 o'clock, so hurry up, it is already 8:30. So you get up quickly and go about your usual work. So you go about your unfinished duties. Just like in your new birth, Krishna gives you the knowledge and the memory to go about your past unfinished desires. Whatever unfinished desires you had in the previous life, Krishna gives you the knowledge in this life. Come on, you had all these desires in the past and you have forgotten what you desired. So now I'm reminding you. This is what you desired. This is what you wanted. And now I'm giving you a chance to fulfill it. So come on, I'm giving you all facility. So in this way, Krishna goes on. Questions afterwards. Okay? A bit slowly? Okay. Paramatma is regulating the speed. I don't know. I try to go slow, but I get so enthusiastic to speak, then Paramatma just speeds it on. Anyway, I am also praying to Paramatma to please slow it down. So, in this way, the Paramatma reminds us that you had a mission to enjoy, and these were the desires you had. So, Krishna reminds us as the Paramatma. Right? So, in other words, the Paramatma is the alarm clock who wakes us up every morning, and because of him only are we able to go about our daily duties once again as if nothing had happened. So similarly, this death and sleep, they are very similar. It is just that at one stage, your consciousness is covered over for a few hours, and in another stage, your consciousness is covered over for many months. That is all. Otherwise, in both cases, it is the Paramatma who puts you to sleep, and the Paramatma who wakes you up. Now, there is one more stage of sleep or unconsciousness in which the living entity sleeps, not just for a few hours or a few months, but he sleeps for millions and millions of years. Do you know what kind of sleep this is? Anyone? Yes? No, liberation is not sleep. Liberation is being coming alive again, completely. Yes? Forgetting Krishna, not exactly. Annihilation, absolutely. You see, this material world, according to Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, is created at a particular point in time, and then it is sustained, it is maintained for millions and millions of years. The lifetime of one universe is approximately 311 trillion years, if you calculate according to the figures given in Bhagavad Gita. Maybe some other time in the future, we will actually show the calculations of how you calculate the age of this universe from Bhagavad Gita. So, 300 trillion years the universe lives for, and then it is destroyed. Once it is destroyed, then again, it remains as it is in an unmanifest, inactive state for the equal period of time. And again, after that time has elapsed, again the Lord revives the whole creation, creates it, He maintains it for 300 trillion years or more, again He destroys it, again it remains unmanifest or inactive for some time, and then again it's created, sustained, destroyed. In this way, the whole cycle of creation, sustenance and destruction of the whole universe is going on. So at the time between one destruction and the next creation, how many years have gone by? Millions and millions of years, trillions of years. At that time, what happens to the Jivatma who are in different material bodies at the time of that destruction? They also are taken by the Lord with Him. They go into deep sleep and they remain with the Lord till the time of the next creation, till the time the universes are created again. And then again the Jivatmas are dispatched into all the different material bodies and revived, and the memory is given to them once again. Yes, before this last destruction, you were in this kind of body. Now you had these kind of desires, and now you want to enjoy in this way. So these are the facilities I give you. Come on, enjoy. So really not much difference here also. So you sleep at night for a few hours. In death you sleep for a few months. And after the universal annihilation, you sleep for many trillions of years. Essentially, it's the same thing. And even at that stage, it is the Paramatma who wakes you up, reminds you, and gives you the knowledge. So this is the way in which we have been going on in this material creation for millions and trillions and trillions of births, all the while being completely dependent on Lord Krishna as the Paramatma in our heart. So whether we know it or not, the Lord in the heart is guiding us at every moment. The devotees have the faith and the knowledge of this fact. The non-devotees do not understand this. The non-devotees cannot understand how the Lord is guiding them. The Lord is guiding the non-devotees and the devotees equally. But the non-devotees cannot understand this. They have no vision because of their impure minds. Whereas the devotees are able to understand. So therefore, for a non-devotee, it is important to understand how the Paramatma is working so he gets some faith. And also for the devotee to increase his faith, it is important to know how the Paramatma is working so we will get some conviction that yes, there is the Paramatma in the heart and he is actually guiding me in this way. So let us see how in practical affairs of our daily life, how we can understand the evidence for the presence of the Super Soul in the heart. In every walk of life, I will try to give some examples. Practical examples to show how we can understand the Paramatma in the heart. You see, in most creative endeavors, whenever you do anything creative, you're writing some poetry, you're writing some essay or some book, or you're painting, or you're composing some music, or you're doing some scientific research and trying to find some answer, some solution to some problems, or you're simply trying to find out which best way to earn money. Whatever some creative thing you are doing, you will notice that it is not always your logical thinking that is helping you. Sometimes suddenly you get a flash. Suddenly, oh yes, that's the way to do it. How many of you have experienced this? You are looking for the answer to a problem and suddenly there is a flash of inspiration. It comes all of a sudden as if somebody has come and planted in your mind. Isn't that? That is called inspiration. And particularly those who are engaged in creative endeavors, they experience this more. So the word inspiration really means that there is something that is coming in your mind which is very difficult to obtain even after intense mental endeavor. But this thing is coming automatically in complete form, fully, as if it was planted by somebody else from outside or from within maybe. This is inspiration. It comes all of a sudden without your knowing it, unexpectedly. And it is not necessarily related to how much effort you have put in. So this inspiration we can see in so many walks of life. In music, for example, in Western classical music, there is a very famous composer called Mozart, Wolfgang Mozart. Now, in his biography, evening, and my mind was feeling good and I was feeling nice and healthy, and the environment, the weather was very pleasant. All of a sudden, these melodies would come to my mind in full form. Not that they come bit by bit by bit. Suddenly, all of a sudden, they've all come. The whole composition has come to my mind. I do not know where it is coming from. I do not know how it is coming. It just comes to my mind. And I start humming that melody and the composition. And immediately I start noting down and I compose that. It comes just like that. Mozart never realized how he was composing the music. It just happened. So who was doing it for him? Who was giving him that flash from inside? The whole composition coming. The Paramatma, the super soul from within. According to karma, some people are more talented in music, some people are more talented in this or that. And according to one's karma and the talent we have, the super soul is guiding each individual accordingly. So he was getting that kind of guidance. Similarly, we see also in recent times there was a lady in India. She was known as a mathematical wizard. And she could do all kinds of mathematical calculations that were difficult even for a computer to do. She would multiply long numbers which had as many as 10 to 13 digits. One 13 digit number multiplied by another 13 digit number, and she would do it in a matter of 1 minute or 30 seconds. And she had a competition with the computer and she defeated the computer. The computer took longer time than she did. Now, is it possible to compute such huge numbers logically in the matter of 30 seconds or 1 minute? Step by step, even if you go step by step, a computer could not do it. Can you go step by step and do it? She could not understand how she was getting the answers. She was just looking inward and suddenly the answer would come. Who was giving her the answer? Some people may say it was just chance. The subconscious mind was just working out different permutations and combinations. But see, when you're multiplying a 13 digit number by another 13 digit number, how many combinations are going to be there? And how long is it going to take for the human brain to try to work it out? So the atheistic people try to somehow find a reason not to believe in God. But any sensible person with common sense will understand that it is impossible for an ordinary brain to just do that. The Paramatma within simply gave that answer, yes, so and so number, another 15 digit, 20 digit number. And she would just rattle out the numbers. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 2, 5, 7, 8, 9, 4, 5. She didn't know how the numbers were coming to her mouth. It was just coming and going on. Who is doing it? Paramatma from within. Similarly, we see the greatest of scientific discoveries. The greatest of scientific discoveries have not gone on simply by step-by-step logical process. They have taken place simply by some flash of inspiration. There was a famous Greek scientist many hundreds of years ago called Archimedes. Those of you who remember your school science, you will remember. Archimedes was trying to understand how some objects are floating in the water. And he was trying to find out some law. And then he was lying in his own bathtub and he was floating in his bath water. And suddenly the Paramatma from within gave him the solution. He had been thinking about this for many months, how to find the answer to this problem. And all of a sudden he got the answer. And then he jumped out of his bathtub as he was. Eureka, Eureka, he shouted. It's a very famous story. Eureka means I have found it, I have found it. And as he was, he ran into the street shouting, Eureka, Eureka. Because the Paramatma suddenly gave him that flash. Where did he get that answer from? The Paramatma. Similarly, there is another famous mathematician called Gauss. He writes that I was working on a problem for many years. I could not solve it. And then one day, like a flash of lightning, the answer came to my mind. I don't know how it came. Just all of a sudden, it just came to my mind. So this is how it goes on. From the smallest, even every one of you has an experience. You've been trying to remember something, or you're trying to do something and you're not finding a solution, and all of a sudden, just like a flash, it comes to your mind. Who is it? What is happening? It's the Paramatma. So all acts of creativity are actually going on because the Paramatma is there from inside, giving you the inspiration, giving you the flash of intuition. Some people say it is intuition, but actually it is the Paramatma from inside. So in this way we can see there are some people who have photographic memories. If they read a book once, they are able to remember the whole thing. And there are some people, even if they read it 1,000 times, you can't remember. Again, the Paramatma is giving somebody memory, he is taking away that memory from somebody. What can you do? So this way the Paramatma is controlling. So now when you go out into your everyday life, try to understand by your practical daily life how the Paramatma is acting in your life. Suddenly you meet one person, you have known him, you see him so often, but you forget his name. And it's so embarrassing, you try to remember, what is your name? It's on the tip of your tongue. What is the meaning of tip of your tongue? It means that the Paramatma is teasing you. Yes, yes, it is here, and then suddenly, okay, take it. So you get it. Ah, yes, your name is like this, isn't it? The Paramatma is holding it from you, and then he suddenly releases it and says, yes, okay, remember now. So in this way, it is only a foolish person who will deny the existence of the Lord in the heart. Everyone and who has even a little common sense, when he understands the way he's acting, the way he's living, down from the smallest instances in life to the big instances, we all understand how great the Lord is and how he's helping us in our day-to-day life. So a non-devotee may not have faith in all these things, but a devotee, he understands at every moment how Krishna is working from within his heart and giving him memory, knowledge and forgetfulness. Even the students in examinations, they cram this formula and they go there and suddenly they go blank. They get very nervous. And suddenly sometimes everything comes back and they're able to write the answer. Isn't it? Everyone has experience. So who can deny it? Yet, atheistic people who are very stubborn will refuse to accept the presence of the Lord in the heart. So the devotees, they understand, yes, God is present and they see His hand in their lives every moment, day after day. And they thank the Lord. And in this way, they're completely dependent on the Lord. The non-devotees, because whatever power they get by virtue of their karma, if they have some good intelligence, good memory, good discoveries, whatever they have, they tend to get proud. It is such an irony that all the scientists, the very inspiration by which they're able to make their discoveries is given to them by the super soul. And that very knowledge, that very inspiration, they use to deny the existence of the person who gave them that in the first place. But the devotees are not so ungrateful. The devotees always appreciate that Lord Krishna is there in my heart and I must become his devotee and serve him. And all the time the devotees are acutely aware that any time Lord Krishna can take away my memory, he can take away my intelligence, or he can give me memory as much as he likes. So devotee, he never gets proud. At least he shouldn't get proud. And if he does get proud, then Krishna will very quickly take it away, all his memory. All devotees have so much experience of this, of how they are controlled by the Lord in their memory, in their knowledge and in their forgetfulness. You see, devotees, because we are involved in preaching work, so many devotees have the experience that sometimes when they go out to speak to some others, maybe giving a lecture or speaking to others, sometimes the words flow, especially if you're not prepared to speak some subject, the words flow from the mouth. They just go on, torrents after torrents. It just comes. The ideas come, the words come. And sometimes one is just struggling what to say. No ideas coming. You know everything. But somehow the ideas don't come. What to speak at this moment? The right words don't come. So the devotee understands, yes, now Krishna doesn't want to speak through me at this moment. Or Krishna wants to speak through me at this moment. So immediately the devotee becomes humble in whatever situation. And even if the devotee is able to speak very nicely, if he gets proud, then Krishna very quietly comes and smashes him. So again the devotee becomes humble and realizes, actually that was not because of me, it was because the super soul was in the heart, Lord Krishna was very kind to me, so he gave me some words to speak. So therefore, we pray, Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayati girim yat kripatam aham vande shri guru dinatarinam. The Lord's mercy is obtained through the medium of the Guru. And in this shloka we hear that by the grace of Guru nothing is impossible. Even a lame man can cross mountains and even a dumb man can speak eloquent poetry. So a devotee considers himself to be a dumb man, unqualified to speak anything, and yet he is grateful for the mercy of the Guru and the Lord that because of them they are giving him some words to speak. Similarly, the devotee considers himself a lame person, incapable of doing anything. But he understands that it is only the Lord from inside as the Paramatma who is giving the strength, the understanding, the wisdom to act in a particular way, in the right way. So in this way, the devotee is completely dependent on the Lord in all circumstances. And he is always vigilant to never get proud and to think that I am doing this. At every stage he understands that Krishna is the only doer and it is only because of Krishna that I am able to do whatever little I am able to do. And even if I am not able to do, that is also because of Krishna. So in this way, he loves Krishna in all situations. When Krishna takes away something, he takes away his memory, he doesn't shout, what is his God? Who is his God? What kind of God is he? No. He loves God equally because he understands Krishna is, he's a puppet in the hands of Krishna. And he enjoys being a puppet in the hands of Krishna because he wants to simply serve the Lord. So there is a nice story to see how when one gets proud, Krishna can take away one's intelligence and completely destroy that pride. You see, 500 years ago, Lord Krishna appeared as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Bengal. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is non-different from Lord Krishna. He's exactly the same personality. So when he came in his Leela, for the first few years of his life, around 18 to 20 years of his life, he was in the Leela of a non-devotee. He behaved as if he was just a normal person. And he was very precocious, very talented. Right from a very young age, he was a genius. He was a genius and he could do everything. He could remember what took other students about several hours to do, he could do in a few seconds. After all, he was God. He was just playing the role of a student. And by the time he was 14 years old, he knew everything. And he became very renowned in the whole town of Navadvip where he was born as a great Pandit. And soon, his name and fame spread far and wide. He was christened as Nimai when he was a child. And because he became so learned at such a young age, he was called as Nimai Pandit. So from far and wide people would come because he was such a great scholar and a great grammarian at only 14 years of age. Navadvip was known at that time as a town of learning. So in that town there were many, many great pandits also. Great titans, great scholars, big, big scholars. And they all became a little envious of Nimai Pandit because he was so young and he was yet so competent. So they became very, very agitated. So one day what happened was, there was a great scholar who had come from Kashmir. His name was Keshav Kashmiri. And he was such a great scholar that he had defeated all the other scholars in debates. It was the habit of great scholars in those days that they would go around and challenge every other scholar and defeat them in debate. And once they were defeated, then he would take their signatures on the paper and then go around proclaiming that, see, I have defeated all the scholars in this town. Of course, such scholarly mentality is not very pleasing to Lord Krishna. They were simply proud. So this scholar, Keshav Kashmiri, once came to Navadvip. And at that time, all the other scholars, fearing humiliation at the hands of Keshav Kashmiri, they fled on some excuse. And they put Nimai Pandit ahead. That if he wins, if Nimai Pandit wins, then we can all boast and say, look, just a mere boy in Navadvip has defeated Keshav Kashmiri. And if he loses, then what do we lose anyway? We have not lost anything. So Nimai Pandit came, and while he was strolling on the Ganges, in the banks of the Ganges, he happened to come across this great scholar, Keshav Kashmiri. And this Keshav Kashmiri came up to Nimai Pandit, and he told him, oh, you are the great Nimai Pandit. I have heard so much about you. So let us engage in a debate. So Nimai Pandit, he said, I am just a young boy, my dear sir. How can I engage in debate with you? But since you are here, let me take the privilege and the pleasure of your association. Please compose some wonderful shlokas in the glory of Mother Ganges. So immediately, Keshav Kashmiri began reeling off exquisite poetry, shlokas, one after the other. Exquisite shlokas and 100 shlokas, one after the other, he composed and on the spot, impromptu. He had not prepared them earlier and memorized them. But on the spot, he prepared all these different shlokas in glorification of Mother Ganges. And each one was a gem. And all the onlookers were struck with wonder. They're wondering, how can any human being do this kind of thing? Each shloka was perfect. But then, Nimai Pandit was after all Lord Krishna himself. So as Keshav Kashmiri was reciting these shlokas, he was memorizing each and every one of them as he was reciting. And after Keshav Kashmiri finished, then Keshav Kashmiri asked him, so what is your opinion? So Nimai Pandit said, my dear sir, I want to refer to your 64th shloka. So he says, what? And he quoted the 64th shloka. Even Keshav Kashmiri himself didn't remember exactly what his 64th shloka was. But he quoted that shloka. And he said, my dear sir, this shloka has 4 weak points and it has 4 strong points. And he narrated the four strong points. And then he said, Keshav Kashmiri got very offended. What do you mean my shlokas have weak points? Till today nobody has pointed out any weaknesses in my poetry and my composition. And you a mere boy, you are trying to offend me in this way? Then Nimai Pandit went ahead and he pointed out all the grammatical and literary faults in the composition of this verse. For example, he was saying that you have said, you have used the word Bhavani Bhartu. Now Bhavani is the name of Durga. Bhavani means the wife of Shiva. And Bhartu means husband. So when you sing Bhavani Bhartu, it is a repetition of the same thing. So you are saying husband of the wife of Shiva. So what is the use of repeating this? So actually, you should have, this is a fault. It is a fallacy in your composition. So Keshav Kashmiri was so thunderstruck by this. He was completely defeated, completely speechless. He was struck with wonder and he was simply watching with his mouth open at this young boy of 14 who had pointed out so many defects in his composition, which nobody ever in this world had been able to do. And he tried to think for an answer. He tried to think for a point to actually oppose that, but nothing would come. Not a single word would come from his mouth. And he was humiliated and devastated thoroughly in front of all the hundreds of people who had assembled. Can you imagine? The greater your ego, if you are humiliated, then the greater the pain. So Keshav Kashmiri had such a big false ego and he was defeated in this manner in front of everyone. He could not tolerate it and he left the town and went. And he began to weep and he began to pray to Mother Saraswati that, Mother, why have you done this to me? Why have you humiliated me in front of this whole town of Navadvip in this fashion? And then, after some days, Mother Saraswati appeared to him in a dream. And she said, My dear Keshav Kashmiri, do not bemoan, do not be distressed. The person who has defeated you, the person who has stolen your intelligence from you and left you speechless, the person who has actually made your composition defective in that one shloka is none other than my Supreme Lord also, the same Lord. So you should not envy him. Actually, you should go and surrender to him. And then Keshav Kashmiri came to his senses and he went to Nimai Pandit and he actually prostrated himself. And he said, Yes, it has been revealed to me that you are the Supreme Lord. And the Nimai Pandit told him, You are the only one who knows the secret. Actually, none of these other people know who I am. So you can go away, but don't reveal this to anyone. And then Keshav Kashmiri went on and he became a great devotee of the Lord. But he went away from that town. So in this way we can see that however great we are, if Krishna decides not to speak from within, if Krishna as the Paramatma in the heart decides to steal your intelligence, if Krishna decides not to give you remembrance, then we will become completely helpless, completely speechless. So in this way a devotee understands that he is utterly and completely at the mercy of the Lord at every moment. Unless he gives us that inspiration, there is no question of doing anything in life. There was a famous inventor called Thomas Alva Edison. He made one very famous quote. Do you remember that quote? He said, genius, he was talking about genius. He says, genius is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. So he was saying that basically what makes all this material progress is perspiration or hard work. And the inspiration will just come 1% contribution. But actually, what is the fact? The fact is that we may perspire as much as we like, but unless the Lord from within gives us that inspiration, we can't do anything. So we are completely dependent. It is not only perspiration. It may be true that the inspiration comes after long years of hard labor, but ultimately, unless Krishna sanctions it from within your heart, unless he gives you that flash of inspiration, that intuition, that extra intelligence by which you can understand things as they are, no discoveries, no inventions, nothing can take place. All the material progress of this world, which is based upon disbelief in God, is actually going on simply because God is empowering these people with all these qualities. So therefore, we should, by this understanding of the way the Paramatma is working in our heart, it should increase our faith in Lord Krishna. We should become better devotees. We don't want to become jnanis or scholars by trying to analyze in this way. We want to understand how wonderfully the Lord is working in the heart. We want to have a better appreciation of how He is contributing to our every moment. And when you appreciate somebody's working, when you appreciate how wonderfully somebody is helping you, then you get to love that person more and more. So ultimately, in spiritual life, our goal is to become pure devotees of the Lord. He's seated in our heart. All we have to do is just turn our face and look inwards and see. He is there waiting for us. And just as He's ever willing to help us, even in our material progress, He is even more willing to help us in our spiritual progress. Just see, if someone is seeking the inspiration for the purpose of material progress, then He is also there for helping you for going towards Him. Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. He says, I am seated in the heart, and for one who is trying to understand me sincerely, I give him the path, I give him the knowledge by which he can come to me. So Krishna gives us these scriptures, the Vedas. Krishna sends us the sadhus, the saintly persons. Krishna sends us his holy name. He gives us so many facilities by which we can understand him, all from within the heart. And how Krishna leads us towards the Vedas, how He helps us to understand the Vedas, what are the Vedas, what is the importance of understanding the Vedic scriptures, that we will study in the next session, next Wednesday. So, thank you very much for coming here. And now if you have any questions, till the darshan opens, I will be glad to answer. And then, if we are interrupted by the darshan, then we will continue the question-answer session after the darshan. Kindly be brief and precise in your questions so we save time.
A person gets the body according to his past deeds. So our present condition is because of a past karma. That may be good or that may be bad. But we all know that every action is a reaction. So in the present condition, if a person commits any sin activity which he is not supposed to do, will he not be further entangled with the reaction of his present action?
Yes, definitely. So Paramatma is permitting us to do that action, whether it is good or bad, and then Paramatma himself is giving us that reaction. So Lord Krishna is controlling us at every step. He is sanctioning your activities, good or bad. He helps you to perform them, and then He gives you the appropriate reaction. So in this way, whether we are committing an action or whether we are receiving the reaction, in all circumstances, we are completely dependent on the Supreme Lord. We have no independence in that sense. Our only independence is to desire. Desire is the only thing we can do. Nothing else. We have no power to fulfill that desire unless the Paramatma sanctions it. He is the Anumanta, Upadrashta Anumanta cha Bharta Bhokta Maheshwaraha. So He is the Anumanta, He is the sanctioner, the witness. Is there any other question?
When somebody murders somebody, why Krishna is giving such order?
Krishna, when somebody is murdering another person, why does Krishna give that order? Krishna doesn't give the order. Krishna simply sanctions. Krishna sanctions, He allows that person to use or misuse His free will. If he uses it rightly, he gets the proper reaction. If he uses it wrongly, he will get that appropriate reaction. Krishna values your independence. Independence to desire. He doesn't want to interfere with that. Because it is the whole relationship between the Jiva and the Supreme Lord is based upon love. Love means that I give you freedom. Not that I tie you up and force you to do this or force you not to do this. So Krishna says, okay, you do this if you like, but remember, you will have to face the reaction. I am guiding you, come on, I am trying to inspire you, come on to this path. Become my devotee. Manmana bhava mad bhakto, madhyaji mam namaskuru. Worship me, become my devotee. Lord Krishna is always guiding us, but we are neglecting His instruction. And we insist on committing sinful activity. We are obstinate, so Lord Krishna says, alright. So we will suffer. And by repeatedly suffering in many, many lifetimes, birth after birth, someday we will come to our senses and realize that actually this material world is not for me. There is so much suffering in this world. Isn't it? That is what we were discussing last three sessions. Therefore, any person who is experiencing suffering, which means everybody, should come to the conclusion that my only goal in life is to now surrender to Krishna and rectify my life. So we will stop now for the darshan, and if there are any more questions, we will continue after the darshan at 9 o'clock.